You're listening to Radio Diaries. This is Joe, and I have some exciting news from the Radiotopia family. Ear Hustle is back with a new season. Hosts Nigel Poor and Erlon Woods are bringing you unique, surprising stories from four California prisons. This season, they have some truly interesting perspectives. You'll hear from people who are so comfortable in prison that they no longer want to be free. And you'll hear from mothers of inmates about the complicated reality of having adult children in prison. The show is full of candid interviews and thought-provoking conversations, and it just keeps getting better. Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts and at earhustlesq.com. Radio Diaries is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations. We also have support from Indeed. Finding new hires shouldn't feel like a second job, and that's why Indeed only matches you with quality candidates that fit your job description. Indeed makes hiring more organized. You can screen, message, and schedule interviews with candidates all in one place. So try it out. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at indeed.com/diaries. Just go to indeed.com/diaries right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Radiotopia. From PRX.
From PRX's Radiotopia, this is Radio Diaries. I'm Joe Richman. Since the pandemic, a lot of people have been looking at work differently. Not just where they work or what they do, but how they're treated. In September, the World Health Organization released a report, the first of its kind for the organization, calling on employers to promote mental health in the workplace. They looked at how factors like poor pay, long hours, and lack of health care are risks to an employee's ability to thrive in the workplace. Of course, the happy employee, happy company link isn't new. 100 years ago, it was called welfare capitalism. And one of the earliest and biggest promoters was a shoe manufacturer named George F. Johnson. Johnson owned the Endicott Johnson Shoe Company in upstate New York. At the time, it was the biggest shoe factory in the world. It produced 52 million pairs of shoes a year and supplied boots to the U.S. Army in both world wars. Johnson was the first in the shoe business to limit the workday to 8 hours. He also built libraries and parks for his employees and offered them free medical care. It was a prime example of welfare capitalism. But Johnson had a different name for it. Today in the podcast, The Square Deal.
My name is Sal Poliziano, and I worked for the Endicott Johnson Corporation for close to 40 years. When I first came up here, I looked around. I said, well, look at this. People are so friendly, and they sit on their porches, and they're listening to band concerts, and they greet me, you know, and, hello, how you doing, son? Everything was camaraderie stuff up here. And everything evolved around this George F. Johnson man. Everything was George F., George F., George F. I'm wondering, who in the world is this man? Who is he?
Noted throughout his brilliant career for his progressive policies, which have been applied particularly to improving working conditions, Mr. Johnson is deservedly called a great humanitarian.
I want you to understand, everything you have done has made everything that I have done possible.
George F. Johnson. He was one of the earliest and largest promoters of welfare capitalism. My name is Melvin Dubofsky. I'm a retired professor of history at the State University of New York. Johnson believed that it was the responsibility of the modern, progressive, up-to-date employer to provide for the workers' welfare. He offered a bargain to his employees, the concept of the square deal.
Now, what we have here Any new employee received a copy of this pamphlet called An EJ Worker's First Lesson in the Square Deal. To the new EJ worker, if you are faithful, loyal, and reliable, you will earn a good living under fair conditions. You are indeed a part of the company.
You are indeed a part of the company. Remember that you are cared for when sick. Medical and hospital service is yours. Privileges of many kinds are yours. Your friend, George F. Johnson. My name is Gerald Zahavi, and I wrote a book about George F. Johnson titled Workers, Managers, and Welfare Capitalism.
Johnson's idea was, if he provided the employees with what he thought they wanted, they would be loyal, and they would show that loyalty. And with less labor turnover, he could outproduce and undersell competitors. And for a lot of working people, it was a remarkably good deal.
The first job that I had was, of course, you just got to start at the bottom, and it was on a freight gang. All of a sudden, I was part of the family, and they would take care of you.
The company provided shoes for the children, health care.
Their medical plan was the most extensive in the country.
The company had its own housing corporation that built homes, financed them.
And they were very cheap, $2,200, $2,500. And if you wanted a garage, another $400, $500 for a garage.
Johnson provided playgrounds, parks, a golf course, theater.
Swimming pools, merry-go-rounds. Well, you can go down and ride the merry-go-round as many times as you want.
I'm Sandra Scanlon, and I'm the granddaughter of George F. Johnson. Grandpa had built 6 carousels in the area. When he was a little boy, he went to the fair, and he didn't have a nickel or a dime to get in to the carousel. And he never forgot that. And so he made all the ones here free. It was written into the law. They were not allowed to charge. And to this day, you ride free.
George F. Johnson, he liked to think of himself as the father of the community.
They would have these concerts on Sunday evenings, and the final song would be Marching Along Together. And Endicott Johnson workers and managers took this as sort of an anthem.
People were singing it on the way home. Marching along together. Da-da-da-da-da-da.
There is an opposite side, an opposite side of the coin. My name is Bob Johnston, and my concept of it was that all of the benefits, this is a way to make people feel as though they had to be grateful to their leaders, the Johnson family. And I felt that this was wrong. The workers worked hard. We shouldn't have to be grateful to somebody for whom we work, for whom we're making money for them.
It was hard work. They were paid, not by the hour, but by the piece. And the worst work was in the tanneries.
Grandpa said, come with me. I want you to see this. I went into the tannery with him, and they had these great big huge vats of acid that stripped the hair off the hides. And these men with huge, huge wooden paddles stirring it with arms on them like fighters. So I'm right behind him, and the stench was horrible. I held my nose, and he turned around and saw me. Young lady, you take your fingers right down from your nose. That's your bread and butter.
You're listening to Radio Diaries. This is Joe, and we want to recommend a new show we think you'll really like. Feet in Two Worlds, the news outlet for immigrant voices, has a new series out called Home Interrupted. It explores how climate change affects immigrant communities and how these same communities are leading the way with innovative solutions. Home Interrupted brings you deeply reported, original stories from across the United States. It takes you everywhere from flooded basement apartments in New York City to indigenous Maya farms in Nebraska. So give it a listen. Episodes drop each week starting April 2nd. Find Feet in Two Worlds, Home Interrupted, wherever you get your podcasts.
America in 1932. the land of lost homes and shattered dreams. Millions of Americans homeless, hungry, and without hope.
When you come to the Depression and the company falls on hard times, Johnson and the company, they have to begin to cut wages.
About 30 years ago, I interviewed around 80 or 90 workers about life and labor at Endicott Johnson, and I still have those old recordings.
During the Depression, our work went down to, well, 3 half days a week, 3 days a week, and it was really rough times.
There was one time I brought home a check for 13 cents. That was my pay for that week.
I remember George F. Johnson coming into the factory and making a speech one time. Well, he says, times are tough. We're not going to lay nobody off. We're all going to take what little we got. And there's lots of dandelions on the hills and fish in the rivers. So we'll have to, I guess, live on that for a while.
At the end of the 1930s, the company was threatened with a union organizing committee.
There was a strike by workers, and George F. Johnson went and tried to talk to them.
We was out there in the street fighting for more money. And he went down and he parked his car in the parking lot, and he tried to talk to us on a loudspeaker. And I'll never forget, there was tears in his eyes. He drove away in tears.
He kept preaching, you don't need a union. They can't give you anything better than what I'm giving you.
Johnson tried to ferret out union organizers from the company, alleging they were subversives.
He employs private detectives, the Pinkertons, to spy on his own workers to find out what conversations are going on in local taverns and bars behind his back. He's getting paranoid.
So the day come for election. What a day that was, though. Oh, boy.
A vote was scheduled for early January of 1940, with over 15,000 workers casting a vote for a union or against a union.
The workers were all given the time off to go and vote, and they went over there to vote with full intention to vote the union in. They went in and voted them out. That's what happened.
When push came to shove, 80% of the workers voted against the union. They did enough. They held on to enough of the square deal to hold on to the loyalty of the workers.
And when the remainder of the country was boiling over with strikes, riots, labor violence, Johnson could proudly say, it doesn't happen here.
Mr. George F. Johnson will now say a few words.
We have proven in this valley that it's possible that labor and capital may live in peace and in harmony. And I hope that great good will come from this demonstration. I thank you.
In the 1940s, Endicott Johnson grew dramatically. In World War II, the company was one of the largest providers of shoes to the U.S. military, and at its height, it employed something like 24,000 workers. Ironically, as the economic health of the company was improving, the health of its patriarch, George F. Johnson, was deteriorating.
New York Times, 1948, Endicott, New York. George F. Johnson, chairman of the board of the Endicott Johnson Corporation, died today here at his home.
The passing of George F. Johnson will stir up in the mind.
The funeral was held, you know, at the stadium. The place was just packed with people, thousands and thousands of people. And you could have heard a pin drop.
1948 probably represented the last peak for the company. And from 1948 on, the story essentially is one of decline.
You have to remember that by the end of the 20th century, a good 70% of shoe production was in China. So that was the real challenge, is foreign imports.
All of a sudden, they were bringing in this vice president and this new president. You know, we're not making any money on that. Let's shut that department. And then you've got people saying, now, wait a minute. It wasn't like that when George F. was here.
I think the square deal is an anachronism today. Now, I don't think that workers expect very much from corporations, period.
My father-in-law worked for Endicott Johnson. My sister. I have nieces and nephews, and all my children worked there. Uncle, aunts. If I could just close my eyes, I could just picture the whole thing in front of me.
Marching along together.
It's changed. It's changed. I notice the merry-go-round is still there, but nobody uses it. As I go by, I just see it going around and around and around and around, like something out of the past.
Marching along together, the Indica Johnson Workers' Band.
That is a beautiful song, you know.
Yeah. Next week will be better.
When George F. Johnson died in 1948, more than 40,000 people filled a football stadium to pay their respects. It was one of the largest funerals in American history. In 1995, the Endicott Johnson Company was finally sold to U.S. Industries, and its operations were moved to Tennessee. 5 years later, it was bought by Citicorp Venture Capital. It's now a subsidiary of Rocky Brands based in Ohio. Today, 99% of shoes sold in the U.S. are imported, mostly from China, Vietnam, and Indonesia.
I've gone through 10 pairs of shoes. Yeah, baby. 10 pairs of shoes. I've gone through 10 nights of blues, all on account of, well, a doll like you.
This story was produced by Samara Freemark and myself with help from John Miller of Homelands Productions. The Radio Diaries team is Nellie Gillis, Elisa Escarce, Micah Hazel, and myself. Our editors are Deborah George, Ben Shapiro. And we have support from the National Endowment for the Humanities and from listeners like you. And Radio Diaries is part of the Radiotopia Network with some of the best podcasts around. You can find them all at radiotopia.fm. And one final note. Sal Poliziano, who you heard in this story, passed away in 2019 at the age of 89. Sal spent his entire career working at the Endicott Johnson Shoe Factory, and when we interviewed him for the story back in 2015, it was clear he would have also been a great radio producer.
I think my background music should be the Endicott Johnson Band, like they're playing behind me, and I think that would be more effective. Of course, it wouldn't have to be to drown me out, but it's like me singing with a 70-piece orchestra. Wouldn't that be nice? Wouldn't that be nice, me talking away? Why can't we use that as background music? Can anybody say?
I'm Joe Richmond. Thanks for listening.
Radiotopia from PR.